Welcome to the Toffee Blues, your source for all things Everton. I'm Jerry. Joining me today, we have Terry, who is here often, but we have a new friend. All right, he is the editor in chief. He pretty much runs Read Everton. Elliot Cuff is with us. Elliot, thanks again for being here, man.
Cheers, man. Thanks for having me.
All right, so actually, I told the guys off camera I was going to start with the story, but I'd rather talk to Elliot first. The mood struck me. So, Elliot, we'll get to your Everton thoughts in a minute. We know you put a lot of Everton content out there, among other clubs. But as far as you also are a big film guy. So yeah. We're going to start. Let's tell us some of the films you're into lately, the ones where you're talking to friends and you're saying, oh, gosh, I saw this. You need to see this.
So I got to admit that as someone who sort of claims to be such a big movie fan, there are so many holes in what I've seen and what I haven't seen. So most of this year has just been catching up on every little bit I've missed. And one film I saw really recently on Netflix is Okja, South Korean movie.
I saw it.
What did you think of that? Because I thought it was really, really good. I really liked sort of the subtext behind it, the actual direction from Lee Bong-ho, the acting in it. I thought it was fantastic, and I've been going through a lot of movies at the moment that are of lesser quality, shall we say. I've got a bit of a... I'm a big fan of bad movies as well as I am of good movies, so that was a nice sort of way to break it up in the last couple of weeks.
For the people listening to the podcast, I'm pumping my fist right now because that's good. I love the... I love the crap. I love the bad films, you know what I mean? The ones that have become art through mediocrity. You know, like the... How as much as Tommy Wiseau wanted The Room to be Citizen Kane, it is, you know what I mean?
That's it.
That kind of stuff.
I saw Anaconda a few weeks ago, and I loved it. It's amazing. Sometimes those are the kind of movies you need to watch, you know. And
the producer of that film was recently the dean of the film school here, and actually she just left. So. Yeah, she was really. It was really great when you got her talking about that movie.
I bet.
I knew you were going to mention The Room as soon as he said bad films. It's you can't even mentioning The Room is banned in my house because my wife's named Lisa. So whenever she does anything that annoys me, is going, "You're tearing me apart, Lisa." All the time, and it pisses her off because she's not even like watched even a clip of that, and she hates it. She just goes, "What voice is that for your dear?" I don't know.
It's the most unique voice ever. Yeah, I can imagine how that great.
Especially, it doesn't help the fact that the director, you know, Tommy Wiseau, refuses to tell people where he's from. He just says, "I'm American." He won't say it. It is such, I mean, there's a reason why people have made movies about the making of that movie. It's oh my god, it's beautiful in how terrible it is. I mean, whenever, for people listening who haven't heard of this film, we're talking about a film director who wrote it, produced it, starred in it, okay, and he directed it, and he didn't know whether or not he wanted to film it in 35 millimeter or in digital. So because he didn't know the difference between the two. So they filmed in both. Okay. 35 millimeter and digital. They taped the two cameras together. Okay. Framed it for 35 millimeter. All right. Wasted all that money on the film. And then he liked the digital footage better. So they used the HD and all that film that they used is wasted. Just an insane, beautifully horrible situation. Oh my god. It's and I've made people's like girlfriends and wives hate me because I put it on while they're at our house and I've played it for them. And Jerry, I cannot believe I still know who Tommy Wiseau is. What is wrong with you? You know, that kind of stuff. Yeah.
It is the perfect bad movie. Out of all of them, it tops them, doesn't it? It is the perfect. How did anyone ever make that and think it was going to be anything other than atrocious?
Yeah. Every once in a while, I'll put my iPod on shuffle and some of the music from The Room will come on. It's the worst. And I, yeah. So anyway, so we've gone through that. Hey. So we know you like the good stuff. We know you like the bad stuff. That's good. And by the way, I feel like almost everybody's got holes in their knowledge. You know, you mentioned that earlier. I'm like, you know how many times I've been to the theater this year, man? Like twice.
Yeah,
really?
Yeah.
I mean, now it's like I have to really mean it when I go to the theater.
I'm the same. I mean, you know, you can't. I can't afford to go every single week as much as I'd love to. So you have to pick and choose, don't you? The big events. You know, the Marvel movies, for example.
Yep.
Big events, you can't miss it, so you go to those. But the smaller films, I think, oh, I'd love to watch that, but I'm gonna have to wait for it to come out elsewhere.
Yeah, actually, I misspoke. I did three. I did Endgame. I did Spider-Verse. Was Spider-Verse this year still, technically?
Far From Home was this year. Spider-Verse was the back end of last year, I think.
Oh, so maybe I didn't do it. Maybe it was just Endgame and Midsommar, the ones that I watched. You know, total opposite in audience as far as who's watching it with you. I'll tell you that.
Oh, I can imagine.
Yeah. So anyway, well, Elliot, we're going to have to keep this going, talk about that some more soon. I have one quick story to tell everybody before we get to Everton things, because I felt like we need some you know, happy feelings. Because yesterday, about a week ago, I was at, we don't have Everton here. So we have to go to college soccer games, right? We don't have Premier League football. We've got college soccer. So I went to a game. One of my buddies who's like in charge of the supporters section is a huge Red, big time Liverpool supporter. And we saw him after the game, and my boys, it was late in the evening. It was like past their bedtime, like 9:30. They're running all over the place. They're nuts. They're 7 and 4 years old. And I saw the Red supporter, and I was talking to him about the game and everything. Well, he's got another buddy, another really nice guy, and he walks by, and he says, oh, by the way, look what he made me. And he held up a shirt, right? And it's a Liverpool shirt. It's a quote by by Carragher, okay? Whatever. I saw it. I tried not to make too much of a deal about it, but, you know, because I was like, argh. But I'm trying to be nice to the guys because they're nice guys, all right? The guy, so it's this really nice shirt. He's super proud of it, super excited. I'm like, Bennett, come check this out. You know, my 7-year-old comes up, looks at his shirt for 2 seconds and just goes, bam, and takes his hand and slams the shirt on the ground and runs away. And I'm sitting there with my hands on my head, like horrified, but secretly gleeful. Because I was just like, you better apologize to him. I mean, because the guy's such a nice guy. He's so disrespectful. And he would, I can't imagine why he did that. But then I'm like, I know exactly why he did that. You know what I mean? So,
yeah, exactly, yeah.
So, yeah, anyway, that's the brainwashing that's happening in our household, apparently. All sorts of antisocial, aberrant behavior coming because of our love for a certain blue team. That's my life. All right, let's get back to the normal Everton things that don't involve tossing red shirts on the ground. For the podcast listeners out there, this is what's going to go down today. We have to talk about the Bournemouth debacle. What happened there? Let's do a little post-mortem. So we're going to talk to these guys about what the deal is with that. Then we're going to have a little middle bit. It has been we put a question out there to the social media universe. Said, what's a good thing for us to talk to? What's a question we could answer? Somebody gave us a juicy one. So we'll get there to that. I'm not going to spoil it because I want genuine reaction. And then we'll talk about our form away from home. Because what the hell? You know what I mean? What is going on? It's very strange to see how up we are for when we play at Goodison and how down we seem to be when we're not. So we're going to talk about that. Then we'll finish up with a quiz. It's a pin shootout quiz, but it's a little different than our other pin shootout quizzes. So we'll talk about that. So, Bournemouth. Spoiler alert, if you recorded the game and are planning on watching it today, I'm giving you fair notice. Okay, we lost. It was 3-1, all right? Despite going in on a good momentum shift at the half, felt pretty good about going into the second half, got to be honest. Dominic Calvert-Lewin grabs a header. despite people like Terry saying, oh gosh, ignore what I said about DCL. Oh, and then he's got to take it back 2 seconds later. I give him flack. Dude, everybody was saying that on social media. So, you know, Terry's just, he just speaks for the masses, I feel. So that happened. I was feeling great. And then, well, as they say, shit happens. So, Elliot, if you want to give us some initial thoughts, I'll get into specifics in a little while, but you want to talk about, go wherever you want to go, is what I'm saying. Carte blanche.
Well, I mean, as you said, it's a bit of a post-mortem, isn't it? Because I think at this point in the season, if you look at the first four games, 7 points from four games, beating teams like Watford and Wolves, who have been tipped to be top half finishers, if not challenging for the European places, you play Bournemouth. And really, there's no way you come into that game not expecting 3 points. And to come away with not three, not even one, but zero after being atrocious again, it's really disappointing because obviously against Aston Villa we did the same thing. We turned up, probably expected it to be too easy, didn't sort of approach the game in the right way, and then you come away looking like idiots. And for me, the one positive is that Calvert-Lewin's opened his account for the season because he's come under a lot of flack online, and it's something that he really needed to do for his own personal game and also for Everton, of course. But I think it's good that he was able to break his duck. But other than that, I don't know what positives you can glean from that, because now you go into Sheffield United this week and it's another team you're expecting to beat. They're a newly promoted side. They don't have an awful lot of Premier League experience. But after losing to Villa and to Bournemouth, do you really feel confident going into that game? Because at the moment, I can't see any consistency. And if you know, pundits keep tipping Everton, will we get top four? Will we get top six? At this rate, there's no way, because you can't win half your games and lose to those sides. You have to be able to grind out results like that. And if we can't do that, if we can't find that extra gear to go to ensure we get the result, then I don't know what we're going to do. I don't know where we go from there.
Yeah. I don't know how to find anything to disagree with that statement. Pretty much all that, I'm like, yeah, thumbs up, man. I'm good. That's, I mean, really, I can't imagine. You know, you told me before this. I mean, Terry and I were feeling like, despite the fact that it was away, we're going to get a win. Felt all right. Terry, you want to talk a little bit about, I mean, I feel like there's some talking points to that we should really make sure we're getting to. We'll get there. Do you have anything particular you want to start off with, or you want me to give you something very specific? Is it too scattershot to say go with your gut on this? Or is it like, well, there's too many targets?
I'll just roll. I for me, looking at the game as a whole, we may as well have just kicked the three goals we conceded in our own net, because the first one is a horrendous, you know, marking from a corner. Once again, second phase of a set piece. They're all up for the first phase. They lose the header and then they all go to sleep. Second one, you know, there's two things to be upset about. You know, Richarlison's been very naive and he's given away a free kick in a dangerous area very cheaply. You know, Schneiderlin had the run covered. He doesn't need to, you know, lunge. He's never getting that ball, Richarlison. And obviously the third one, Yerry Mina has gone for a bit of a walk and decided to stay where he was and just give Callum Wilson an easy, I don't want to say an easy goal, it was a good finish, but like an easy opportunity. So just a defensive disaster class, absolutely awful from the team as a whole. So it's we're our own worst enemy. We can't get out of our own way when we're playing some of these teams, especially, you know, away from home. I don't want to go too much into the away form yet because we're going to touch on that in a bit. But it just seems like we have to beat ourselves. We start with a goal down in these away matches.
Yeah, just silly goal after silly goal after silly goal. It was really difficult to watch. Just the final one with Mina being sucked too far to the opposite side that he's playing. Too far up, too far wide. And I know he's wanting to do what he really wanting to do the right thing. He's really wanting to have an impact. But if you're almost too emotional in that moment, you start losing your discipline. And I feel like that's something that happened for him right there. Defensive I don't know that it's miscommunications. It's mental lapses. And we did not look aggressive on set pieces. I felt like they got first touch on most set pieces. You know, that's an issue. And I feel like, I know they went big. They did go out. They did come out pretty tall. You know, they went with some players that were taller, to be able to be a little bit more physical on set pieces, I believe. And they came out pressing. I don't know that I thought they were going to come out like straight up pressing. You know, they pressed every opportunity they had first half in the beginning of the second half. I felt like we reacted like we didn't think it was going to happen. We gave away the ball way too cheaply coming out of the back, like a lot. It's a mentality. Now we'll get there. We're going to talk more about away form later. So I don't really want to make this strictly about mentality. But a big part of this was defensive mental lapses as a group, as a whole. It's not even one dude this time. It's a group. So anyway, we've gotten past that. All right. I think the things that made people's eyebrows raise at the very beginning, Elliot, DCL was in for Keane and Schneiderlin was in for Gomes, Andre Gomes. All right. It's like, I'm just going to say it every way you can pronounce it. But I don't know if you want to talk about DCL getting the nod instead, Schneiderlin. I think those are the two things where people were like, I don't know about that. But honestly, I don't think those were the big problems for us today, you know?
Yeah, you're right. I don't think they ended up being the main problems. But I was speaking on the radio earlier in the week about Moise Keane, and you look at him as a 19-year-old, extremely talented young player. He's going to be a big star in the future, but he needs an adjustment period in the Premier League. And at the moment, Everton don't have the patience. They don't have the affordability to let him do that. So if he doesn't perform, if he doesn't start scoring, then naturally it made sense to me that Silva would bring Calvert-Lewin back into the lineup because he can rely on him in the sense that he has prior experience of scoring. Even if he isn't the most promising outlet for Everton to score with at the moment because he looks so poor. I think the problem with Calvert-Lewin is too often he wants to walk the ball into the net. He doesn't just take the first opportunity. He could take a touch inside and hit the ball. You're not going to score every one. Of course you're not, from 18 yards, 20 yards. But if you keep trying, you'll eventually get on the score sheet. If you take too long, you get possession taken off you all the time. And it's a shame. But I think the main problem, when you touched on it, was Andre Gomes not playing. We know it was a rib injury that kept him out. So we had Schneiderlin and Delph in there. But that is a very, very defensive formation, and even though you are playing away, so you don't want to be too offensive against a team like Bournemouth, who Everton have struggled against in the past, we know they like to attack forward, we know they like to move forward quickly, they've got a lot of young talented players. We need to make sure that whenever we're moving forward we have the most creative approach. And I think if you don't have someone like Gomes, who's a bit more silkier in midfield, who can link up play a lot better than some of the other midfielders, you're then asking too much of Kiefer Sigurdsson. And at that point, Schneiderlin and Delph, it's just far too defensive, especially, you know, against a team like Bournemouth, who you want to really be going for, you want to be attacking head on. So, yeah, they weren't specifically, Schneiderlin and Calvert-Lewin weren't the main problems. They didn't cause the issues. But I think from a tactical arrangement perspective, from the very beginning, you're on the wrong foot. And then you have to make up what you've lost with those players. And then, you know, as soon as Bournemouth come out on the front foot and start attacking, then you're already struggling. But as you mentioned with Yerry Mina at the back, you know, not just one player, but the entire defensive unit was poor. And that's what let us down. And I don't know how you try and make sure that is more compact and that they're more consistent at the back, because we need that. You need that consistency at the back. Otherwise, we're not going to get where we want to be. And that, you know, it'd be a real shame if silly defensive errors every single week are what cost us a European place, or something even better than that, you know, if other teams around us are not performing as well.
We did it a lot last year, didn't we?
Certainly did, yeah. I mean, set pieces was something we conceded a lot from last year, and it's you know, we can't have that. We can't have that happen all the time, because eventually you need to grow. If you're going to develop as a club, you need to identify what the problems are, how do we fix them, and then you make those moves. And it seems that in certain areas, we're not doing that. We obviously, you know, the amount of media for all that was around Kurt Zouma's replacement not being brought in, we didn't find that centre-back to come in and partner Michael Keane. And we've been lucky that Yerry Mina has been fairly decent so far, just like the season. But that's an issue we knew we had, and we didn't fix it. And if you don't fix problems, how do you expect to grow? And that's my biggest problem. I think that, yes, we signed Moise Keane. We signed a striker who is potential, but he could go on to fill that Lukaku role. But that is not enough to cover up all the other cracks in the squad. And I think with poor performances like the one against Bournemouth, it shows that there's still so much work to be done to get Everton to a point where they can actually challenge for anything.
I was thinking, you know, when you watch Schneiderlin play, he didn't have a poor game. I guess it's just considering what he does as a player compared to what Gomez does. Gomez is sort of like a transitional player. He's really good at taking it from, you know, we've just gained possession, starting an attack. He may not be the one creating the chances in the box, which he rarely is. He's almost never that guy, you know, but he's really good at getting it to the people that are. And he's usually pretty good at maintaining the ball. Schneiderlin, frankly, his passing was all right yesterday. You know, it wasn't entirely backwards. He made a decent amount of forward passes. I specifically was watching for it. And he didn't give the ball away. I thought he had some silly fouls, some really silly fouls in a few areas that just didn't need to happen. At one time, he dispossessed a player and then afterward went back in and hacked the leg. The ball was gone, just went back in. It just gave him a stupid kick, you know, for no reason at all. So I don't know. It's a weird thing. And I think DCL, is it possible that for a lot of people that thought Keane should have started, and I may want to give this to Terry, is it possible, because it seemed like Silva brought him in because of the way of certain qualities that he has against Bournemouth, a team that has other qualities. So was he thinking aerial ability? Is that what he's thinking? Is he thinking pressing and speed, Terry? Is it the fact that he's just straight up overthinking it and should have played Moise Keane just because he appears to be more clinical, but we don't know yet?
I mean, I think the only reason is probably the aerial capability. Like, Bournemouth have got smaller centre backs, and Calvert-Lewin's, you know, decent in the air, and you know it worked sort of. We got a headed goal from Calvert-Lewin from across, but we didn't cross to him enough. We spend every game whipping 50 crosses in and getting nowhere. The one game where it might have been far more appropriate, it didn't seem to happen. I mean, you want to cause yourself grief on Twitter than defend Calvert-Lewin. I mean, he's been assigned as the boo boy at the minute, which, you know, some people are being overly negative, but a lot of people, you know, just saying what they think, you know, they don't think he's good enough, and you know, there's something to be said for that as well. But I think the main problem is you can't have him and Sigurdsson together. They get in each other's way. They don't seem to understand what the other one wants the other one to do. So Calvert-Lewin doesn't know where to go for Sigurdsson, and Sigurdsson doesn't know where to put it for Calvert-Lewin. So I just think it's a bad combination, and basically, you're going to have to pick one or the other for me, and it's going to be Sigurdsson, isn't it? Let's be honest, because he seems to be the main, you know, creator in the team. You know, people are crying out for him to, you know, drop to the bench, put a Iwobi behind the striker. I think it's far more likely that Sigurdsson stays and they change about with the striker, depending on who that is. I mean, I want to see more of Moise Keane, but I certainly don't think, you know, Moise Keane on the pitch from the start, we still concede those three goals. For me, anyway, maybe we change the game if we score from, you know, different chances that he creates. You know, it's a big what if, but I don't know. I think at the minute, you know, because there's been so much player recycling in the summer, that we're still, you know, we don't believe we should be, but we are still in the, and I'm pains to use the word, transitional sort of phase, where we're sort of figuring out the team, the chemistry, the formula, who works well with who doesn't work well. Because, you know, we've put so far this season, you know, we've used Gomez in a couple of games, we've used Schneiderlin in a couple of games, excuse me. We've Ajax started with Bernard. He played well. Come out for Iwobi. Now Iwobi's in. Keane started. Looked good against Wolves. Then he came straight back out because Calvert-Lewin comes in because it's Bournemouth. I think we're still figuring things out, and hope we figure it out quickly, because we've wasted a massive opportunity with these early fixtures. I never go into away games expecting to win, but you looked at these fixtures and just thought, there is a perfect opportunity to correct the away form. You've got early games against Palace, who are in disarray, Bournemouth, Aston Villa, who've just come up. It's such a waste, and you just feel like it's of our own making because of the type of goals we're conceding, that they are from individual errors or, you know, poor performances as a whole, as a team. The only, I suppose, saving grace for the goals we conceded at the weekend is they're three very coachable goals. It's you know, pick up your man better on the corner, you know, be better in the second phase, you know, Delf go with the other foot on that free kick and you just clear it first time, send him into the stand. Yerry, don't get caught ball watching. These goals we were conceding every game in the middle third of last season, and we were decrying it for a long time. And then we had that long break and they seemed to disappear. We seem to have sorted the defensive lapses out, but they've crept back in. No, I'm not, don't think, well, I hope they haven't crept back in full time. I'm not suggesting that, oh, suddenly we can't defend anymore, because we started off the season really strong defensively, but it doesn't mean you can't, you know, slip back into bad habits. And I just hope that Silva gets them on the training pitch this week and says, listen, we're going to drill set pieces, because you've literally shipped two easy goals in one game and then let a third in from open play.
You look at the changes that Silva made in the second half. Anything you felt like was a positive? What you're thinking? You were sitting there nodding your head, thinking, "Yes, that's the one we needed." Or were you thinking, honestly, this is just one of those games where I don't really think any of these changes are going to matter?
Well, I mean, Moise Keane and Bernard come on at the same time, and that, I mean, you have to see that as positive because it's two attacking options. I personally think it's really harsh on Bernard to have lost his place. It makes sense that Alex Iwobi comes in, replaces him, but I'm not the biggest fan of Sigurdsson, and I would have been absolutely fine to see Bernard and Iwobi occupy those roles, whether one, you know, whichever one plays left, whichever one plays behind the striker. So I think that's positive. Walcott, on the other hand, I mean, I had a feeling you were
going to go on this.
I've vocalised it a lot on Twitter. I have lost all patience for Theo Walcott. He doesn't do anything. He adds nothing to the game. So when he comes on, it was wasted for me. But yeah, when Keane and Bernard come on, you're thinking, right, well, clearly Silva isn't happy with how it's going. Clearly he wants to really get straight back into them. Come on, let's rally around, get the troops together, let's rally together, and let's really hit them where it hurts. But as soon as the third goal, I think the third goal was scored moments after Bernard and Keane come on. And at that point, you're thinking, I don't think we have what it takes to get back. And it's a shame, really, because most sides would look at that and go, two goals down, it's Bournemouth. We got 20 minutes here, we can do this. But Everton have beat you into submission to the point where you start to think, can we get back to this? Don't think so. Not the way we're playing at the moment, anyway. And that definitely has to change, because, I mean, I wasn't at the game, but for people from Liverpool who travel all the way down to Bournemouth, the least you want is to see them actually try to really take it to the final whistle. And I think, you know, certain players performed well in the first half and dropped off in the second, and that's not what you want. You want people to be picking up that extra wind in the second half to really be taking it to the full-time whistle to the best of their ability throughout the full 90 minutes, and I don't think we saw that, which is, you know, disappointing.
Yeah, there were stretches where we clearly seemed like we were going to actually start putting some in. You know, we actually had some like long stretches, and then it was just a dumb move here and we're down. You know, it was really frustrating. I mean, the commentators we had on our feed, one of them was awful, by the way, on the NBC Sports feed. Oh my God, it just did nothing. I mean, my wife looked over at me. My wife, who was halfway watching the game, she looked over and was like, this guy hates Everton, doesn't he? My wife said that, okay? And I'm like, well, honestly, it's a pretty common thing.
Yeah, I was going to say it's something we get a lot of with commentators over here as well.
But yeah, so it was a pretty frustrating viewing. And you know what? When it was over, I was seething, and my house got spotless because I cleaned the hell out of it. I used the energy for good. Everton powered the cleaning machine. So yeah. Yeah, that's one good thing a loss is it yeah. does for us.
The silver lining.
Yeah, that's about it. So anything else on this, guys? I'm really ready to put this in our rear view.
Yeah, I mean I'm done with this with talking about Bournemouth. It was bad.
Yeah. The Bournemouth hangover.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want to, yeah. Still tastes a little like vomit, just saying. All right. So, that's all for our extra time, the post-mortem on that crap from Sunday. All right, so it's time for the middle bit. This question comes from Tom Elder 9, who dwelleth on Instagram. Tom asks, if you're ready for this, guys, pretty greatly timed. Realistically, when do you think we'll be back in the top four?
Ugh.
It's something like that. All right, so from Elliot's disgusted groan, I'm going to start with Terry on this one. Terry? Yeah, how many years? This year, next year, year after, 3 years, decade? Baker's dozen years?
Within the next 2 years, or it doesn't happen at all.
Wow.
Because Chelsea and Man United are at their lowest ebb, you know, big picture wise, that obviously they've had, you know, positive results the weekend, but, you know, off the pitch, Chelsea, you know, had issues. Is Abramovich going to leave? So on. They've got a transfer ban. You know, this managerial, like, merry-go-round they've got going is sort of catching up on them. Man United, we, you know, well documents the problems there. You know, they've made mistakes at manager level. Their recruitment's been awful. All these things which have weakened these established Champions League clubs, they won't last forever. There's too much money flowing through those clubs for it to stay. You know, we need to do what Spurs got in and muscled their way in and have stayed in. Whereas we, if we're going to do that, we can't let, you know, those two other clubs get their wind back, because if they do, we can't catch them. They're driving cars in a race that are faster than ours by a long way. They've stopped at the side of the road, both of them. We need to make up that ground while they have, because if they get going again, we'll never catch them. So I'm going to say in the next 2 years, or it won't happen for another 15, 20.
This has been a moment with the metaphor master. Look at that.
I liked that.
It's like a car. It's like a car race, everybody.
Mm-hmm.
Uh-huh. All right. So, Elliot, are you ready for an answer, or do you wanna grab one more?
Yeah, I think it's hard not to look at Leicester and see that they were never going to get top four, never going to get top six, and then out of absolute nowhere won the title. So I think they're a problem, because you'd always look at teams like that, as seasons like that, and think, well, you know, we could do that. But in terms of longevity and establishing yourself in that position, I agree with Terry that I think if we don't get it in the next couple of years, then all these teams will just power past us. Liverpool, Man City, Arsenal, they're all spending so much money. And yes, Everton are rich now, but can't compete on the same level as these clubs. And while Chelsea and Man United are down, they're certainly not out. And if they come back strong, and we haven't made up that ground, as Terry said, you know, I can't see it happening anytime soon. This season was a big season, especially with Chelsea's transfer ban. Next season will also be big. And as it stands, I can't see it happening. So I don't want to be too pessimistic, but I'm not optimistic, if you know what I mean. I'm not feeling like it's going to happen anytime soon. But I mean, for me, the main thing is trophies. silverware. I want a trophy. I haven't been alive and seen ever someone a trophy. Since I've been alive, we've never won anything. So that's my sort of the thing I'm clinging on to, because I just can't see top four.
All right. So I'm just going to take the mystery out of this. It'll be 2 years. I talked to Farhad. 2 years. All right? Right now we're too thin. We're not deep enough. We're having injury issues and we can't really cover them. 2 years. We'll have the people in we want. Yeah, maybe some other teams will have recovered by then. Yeah, it'll be 2 years. Farhad's making it happen.
I'll take it.
Yeah.
Then again, I we're making our assumptions, I assume, all of us, on the way things are now. If we get the stadium in 3, maybe 4 years, who knows where we'll be? It could be, oh, well, you know, Man United and Chelsea have got their act together. Or maybe they don't. And, you know, we've got a stadium and it allows us to be a little bit more, you know, free, you know, money-wise. I'm not saying that we're not spending now. We are. But then with the new stadium, we can suddenly start going out and getting top players and, you know, sort of boosting ourselves, you know, because at the minute we're spending a lot of money, but we're sort of maintaining a level because everyone else around us is also spending decent money and, you know, recruiting better than we did a few years ago. So they haven't got mistakes to correct like we have. Who knows? The stadium might have a massive say and change, you know, everyone's opinion on that. We could turn around in 3 years and go, okay, it's now in the next 3 years after this, because the landscape's changed so much. I mean, let's hope so. But as things are now, I think this is the best chance we've had in a long time.
You're right. That's something I hadn't thought about with the stadium. You know, you look in the last couple of years, the last 5 years, when we first come into money under Farhad, we were looking at people like Juan Mata and Axel Witsel, if you believe what the papers were saying. And those are the kind of players that we couldn't land because we had the money, but we didn't have the clout. We didn't have the stature to bring them in, even though, you know, people look at the history books and go, what a big club Everton are. We didn't have the ability to bring them in now. So you're right in saying that if we move into a brand new, much bigger stadium, you know, people can look at us and start to think, well, there's a really big project going on at Everton. And yeah, we might not be in Europe this year or maybe not even next year, but I'm going to buy into that now. I'm going to jump on board now. And hopefully, you know, in a couple of years' time, we'll be in that position. So it's a really good point. And hopefully, because, you know, it's a bit more positive and something to look forward to in the next couple of years.
Yeah, and I think, honestly, people see that project. The players who've already come here see that project already. I really do think that. And additionally, Marcel Brands, just saying. That guy's...
That's help.
He's additionally... Yes, praise him. Marcel... Got you new candles. We're good now. All right.
No, that.
So yeah, he's doing a good job selling the club, selling the vision, and he's not. I don't even think he's like selling a dream. He's selling a look. Hey, this is the process. Check this out. You know, this is how it will work.
It's with a confidence that he's basically saying, "Look, this is going to happen."
Yeah.
Get on board now. You know, not well. Maybe I don't know. Like you can imagine, Steve Walsh might have done. It does very much feel like he's saying, look, we are going to be there. Come on board now, and you'll be thanking us in a couple of years' time.
The Steve Walsh plan is, let me get me a briefcase, and I'm going to go to Italy. Make sure the cameras are on me.
I'm going to walk around to every club and just ask them if they've got anything going.
Oh. I can't say all, though, because, we all lived through that. So... Okay. All right. So, yeah. So, essentially, Terry says 2 years or never, right? Elliot said, in a couple years, I think? A couple years?
Yeah.
Yeah. And I said two because Farhad said. All right. So, no more middle bit. We're going to move on. Talk about form away from home. Yikes. We got to talk about Everton's form away from home because it's pretty damn dire. That was pretty much the word that I used to describe whenever anyone was asking me about the game yesterday. Oh, how'd y'all do? just dire, just so dire. And it's been like that. I mean, it's been kind of a thing, all right, where we've been dropping our performances are just significantly different away from home than it is at Goodison. So here's something. I'm just going to throw this out there. I think it's a little stupid, but only because I want to get the conversation going. And this is such a weird topic to talk about, all right? So I'm going to start with Terry, because even though technically he did start the middle bit on the podcast, he did not start this video. So, yeah. Is our home support, home form, so strong that it masks kind of our true shittiness? which it's weird. Is it the away form, the actual true Everton, is it the fact that, you know what I mean? I'm so depressed to think like that, but I'm kind of like, think about how great our atmosphere is at Goodison right now. It's great. Sirens there. The supporters are loud. We've got banners flying. It's a pretty awesome thing at Goodison they have going right now. All right. Is that mojo helping to fuel us at home and kind of really helping feed us? Because it's strange because we have great away support every single time. That's one of the things people know the club by, is fantastic away support, right? So I would think a little bit of that would transfer over, but I don't know. So it's obviously a mentality thing, right, Terry? And if so, I mean, how in the hell is this going to get remedied if it's a mentality thing? You know what I mean?
I mean, it's definitely a mentality thing, isn't it? I mean, I don't think... I mean, obviously, the support will play a little part, but you touched on it there. The away support's fantastic. It's not that, you know, the away support's poor and the home support's great. Sometimes you could even say the opposite. In the past, Goodison's been quite daunting for the Everton players to play in.
Mm-hmm.
I think... You know what I think it is? It's the same thing that has affected Arsenal for years, and it's affected us for years now, is that we've got good players, good, skillful, quality footballers. So when we're at home, it's all about how good we are, you know, sort of how good's the team. Whereas away from home, it's not about really as much of how good you are, it's how strong you are. And when they're at Goodison, they're not afforded the luxury of putting their head down when they concede, because the crowd, being the Everton home crowd, don't allow that. You know, they get on the players straight away, and you know that, you know, they'll, that sort of roar kicks in. Go, you know, and the players can't sort of deflate like they do away from home, because you just can't. You're in front of Goodison, so they get back into the game, or they'll try and get back, or they'll push, you know, through the barrier of a bad spell in the game. Whereas away from home, they don't do that. If you look at the second goal we conceded against Bournemouth, we've been on top for a long time. Our quality of player was showing against Bournemouth. We were having much better of the game against them. Obviously, we conceded with a poor set piece, but on the strength of the game, we were the better team. But as soon as another goal goes in again and another set piece, it's like the air came out of the team, and obviously you can see another straight away and nullifies Silva's substitution, whatever he was trying to do to change, you know, it doesn't matter then, you're two goals down rather than one, the game's getting away from you. But at Goodison, if we go 2-1 down, you can't just suddenly let all your heads go down because you haven't got that luxury. Whereas away from home, they always do it. They let the opposition crowd get to them. We've seen it happen to individual players, you know, Pickford at Newcastle's an obvious one. The crowd beat us away at Villa this year, you know, the way they were all up for it, and great home atmosphere. We couldn't weather that, and we just need to force it out of ourselves. It's affected so many other managers before Silva. Everyone's like, you know, decrying Silva, but honestly, 6 years before this, we've been, you know, been poor. 2014-15, 5 away wins. 2015-16, 6 away wins. It's the same four the year after that, 3 the year after that, and then last year, 5. It's just we've turned into a mini Arsenal. Arsenal, when they're at the Emirates, and the same as now Everton at Goodison. I fancy us against practically any team, even the top two. obviously we don't want to beat City, so we'll never know how we're going to, we don't know how we stack up against them. But even in the last 2 years, the home games against Liverpool, there have been two draws. Obviously there's more to it, you know, time into the fixtures and whatnot, but considering they're one of the better teams in the league, we've done well against them. I fancy Everton at home against anyone, but away from home, when it comes to, you know, strength of character, I'd be happy with a draw before kickoff, no matter who it's against. Relegation, you know, fodder, teams out of form. That doesn't seem to affect teams when they play us if they're out of form. In fact, we're the team they want to play. Because if you're out of form or your striker needs a goal or whatever, play Everton, because we always seem to crumble under pressure. The only way it will, I think, be fixed is just with, you know, the players going to have to sort it out themselves. We've got, you named the squad from 6 years ago. I've just gone back through the wins each season. Then you'll probably see about three players who are still in the club, and only one will be starting from 6 years ago, and that'll be Coleman. There's players in the squad who aren't, you know, who are winners or have the makings of winners. Luca Dean, Yerry Mina seems to, you know, be up for a fight. You know, Fabian Delphi, he started strongly in the game, and, you know, he obviously had a bit of a wobbler when he let the, you know, he was at fault for one of the goals. It's just going to be after something that we sort out, the players sort out amongst themselves, because it can't go on. It's gone through several managers and several sets of players, and it just seems to be ingrained in the club at this point. But it can't stay like that if we ever want to achieve anything.
Elliot, you want to contribute on that? Because
I mean, I agree with a lot of that. I think it's tough to harp on about mentality and. Excuse me, and mentality being the only issue, but it's such a big part of it, and I do feel that, you know, sometimes Everton go away and they're frightened as such. They don't feel comfortable. They're on edge. They're already having to compete. They've already got a negative handicap from the very beginning, and it's not something that long term is going to serve us well. And you're right in the past, you know, in the last 5 years, there was a period where we were horrendous at home, and every single time, I mean, I remember Ross Barkley getting so much grief from the fan base that he was really struggling personally to cope with the pressure because Gunnison became so toxic. And now that it's night and day compared to what it is now, and it's like a pendulum. We seem to be able to fix one problem, and then the next one arises, and if we can fix that one, then this goes wrong. And I don't know how we really get around that, how we amend that. You know, you can always look at more quality players. The better players we have, the more likely we're going to beat whoever we're playing. I don't think there's anything wrong with Marcus Silva. I can't see any reason why you'd question him as a manager, not this early into his career. I don't think he's made that many missteps, a couple of tactical errors, but nothing major. So I think it's really difficult to try and figure out exactly how you remedy the problem we have. I'm interested to hear what you think, Jerry, because I personally, if I was in charge, I don't know how I would find a fix for this problem.
I don't think there's a quick fix, if I'm honest. I feel like the idea of a quick fix is, you know, it'd be great to be like, oh, no, just flip our formation and we're fine. No, you know what I mean? No, I think this is one thing. We as a club, we get a lot of bad breaks, don't we? We get a lot of bad breaks on the road, all right? However, if we continue to improve as a club, continue to play better football, continue to play to make fewer mistakes, continue to be clinical when we have those chances in front of goal. Sigurdsson gets that chance second half. It's you know, 4 yards to the left or right, it's probably in. You know, instead, it's pretty much right at the keeper. Moments like that. And granted, that was a tough one, but still, we had some chances. We didn't put them in. All right? If we continue to get better, we are going to get more of these breaks. You know, we're just going to. And it's going to take old-fashioned bullying through the circumstances to change the culture, to change the mentality. I don't see any other way. you know what? I mean, it's just a matter of our team continuing to, and you're right, guys, they're going to have to come together and be like, and make some decisions. But no, I don't think any amount of team meetings is going to change mentality in one night, but it may get them through one game. You know, there's something about having that inner confidence when you walk in a room knowing I've done this before. That is a different level when you walk in and you're almost made out of Kevlar. You know what I mean? You're floating on a cloud. You literally float in and you know you've done it before. You know? And I think it's just going to take us doing it, becoming a better football team. I can't think of any other way. Cuz we're not brilliant yet. We're not very deep. We're not, you know? One player gets hurt, that can put a huge dent in our game plan. Every single time. You know, tactics can have to be changed. Andre Gomez is out. You know, for it to deflate, for things to, it would have been tough. We still had chances. That's the crazy thing. We still had chances. Didn't finish them. You know, frankly, if we don't make those silly mistakes, we win 1-0. You know, that's the crazy thing. We don't do those silly little, but we did. You know, and we're going to keep doing them unless we become a better football team. There's really no other way around it. You know, I got nothing. I definitely don't know the miracle cure. If I did, believe me, I'd have been sending the answer to old Marcel saying, hey, here it is. But it's tough. It's tough. I mean, we're talking about mentality. We're talking about a gloom, literally a gloom that hangs over the team at moments like that. You know, we just got to get through it. It starts with the small ones. Don't we go away to Sheffield Wednesday
soon? Yeah. Next week, we got away to Sheffield United at the weekend, I think, mm-hmm. and then away to Sheffield Wednesday in the week.
Two great opportunities to build up some momentum away. You know, I would see it as an opportunity, not as a, damn, we got to do this again. No. You know, let's get on a roll. You know, I'm Mr. Positive. I'm the, you know, I haven't suffered through an entire lifetime of this. But at the same time, I think it's an opportunity. I would love to just sit there and take down both Sheffield teams. You know, it could be a big starter for us. Go a little ways toward, but the mentality is not going to be shifted in two games, even if we win them. It's still, yeah, so. Anyway, anything else on this, guys? This is a tough one because there are no right or wrong answers, are there? You know, it's just, hey, this is what we guess.
You're right, and there's no immediate fix or no evident recipe that's going to just make everything go away. Yeah. So, yeah, it's a long game.
Yeah.
So, fingers crossed. I mean, it'd be interesting in a week's time. I mean, touch wood, I don't want this to happen, but in a week's time, if you lose to Wednesday and you lose to Sheffield United, then you address the question again. It's a whole different ballgame, but, you know, fingers crossed. Yeah. You have a good week.
Definitely. All right. So, guys, we feel like we've given this ample attention at the moment.
Mm-hmm.
Let's hope we get to do this same segment in a different way. Coming up in the future. Like, how are we so great away from home? That'd be nice.
We can't stop it.
All right. Well, that's it for our former away from home segment. And ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, children of all ages, it's time for If You Know Your History, the Everton-based quiz segment that pits Terry against Elliot in a cage match of Toffees, Wit, and Might. So, guys, it's a penalty shootout quiz. I will be naming a category, and you guys have to kind of, you know, go back and forth and try to name the players that are necessary. I don't really know any other way to dress this up. God, that was the worst explanation I've ever given on this segment. I'm just like, yeah, figure it out. Ew! You know, it's... Good luck to you. Yeah, I channel my southern side whenever I'm being ridiculous. So we are going to let Elliot call it. We're going to flip this fake real coin. There he is. Looks like Martin Sheen. It's not. So I'm going to flip this. Elliot, heads or tails, sir?
Tails, please.
Shit. I'm going to do it again. All right. It's plastic. It doesn't flip well. It is tails. So, Elliot, would you like to go first or second?
I'm going to go second, please, Jerry.
Second. Okay. Yeah. And so go ahead and cue the intense quiz music. There you go. Well done. Well done. That's very intense quiz music we're imagining right now. And you're hearing the real thing, people out there. So here's the category, gentlemen. Name an Everton player who scored in the 2008-2009 season. So, obviously, there are lots of these. You will go back and forth, seeing what's going on.
Oh, God. Right?
I actually don't think this is a pin shootout quiz. I think this is more just like a regular old, like, category quiz, and we just go back and forth till somebody misses. All right? So, there it is. We've got the intense music still going. Elliot, can you give me a player who scored in the 2008-2009 Everton player?
Terry's up first, isn't he?
Oh, Terry is up first. We flipped the coin for no reason. I just ignored the coin, you know, flip result. Yeah. Terry, hi. Terry, go first. Can you name me a player that scored 2008-2009 season?
Tim Cahill.
Tim Cahill. That's a hit. Tim Cahill scored 9 goals that season. Elliot.
I feel this is definitely where I'm going to be found out to be a fraud. I'm going to go Mikel Arteta.
Mikel Arteta. That is a hit, sir. 6 goals that season. Mikel Arteta. Terry.
Luis Saha.
Luis Saha. Yes, that's a hit. He got 8 goals that season. Elliot.
Steven Pienaar.
Steven Pienaar, 2 goals that season. Good job, guys. You're rolling. Well done. Terry, it is your turn again.
Julian Lescott.
Julian Lescott, 5 goals for Julian Lescott. All right. Elliot?
Leighton Baines.
Leighton Baines, 1 goal that season. That's a close one. Terold. What do you have?
Leon Osman.
Leon Osman, 7 goals for Leon Osman that season. Elliot?
So here's where we start getting mixed up between years. Yakubu.
Yakubu, 5 goals for Yakubu that season. Terry? Response?
Phil Neville.
Phil Neville is not on the list. So, Elliot, you've got to get this right. You've got to have a hit.
Oh, no.
If so, you will be... You will be the winner. You already...
So that's an 8-9. This is really tough. I'm going to go with Phil Jagielka.
Phil Jagielka scored 1 goal
season.
Oh, Elliot, you like your 1 goal scorers there.
I was scraping the bottom there, wasn't I?
Good showing, guys. The rest of the answers, I'll rattle them off. Marouane Fellaini had 9 goals that season. Almost said 11. What the hell? No one had 11. So Fellaini had 9 goals that season. Joe had 5 that season. Dan Gosling had 3. Joseph Yobo had 1. Jack Rodwell had 1. Victor Anichebe had 1. And Segundo Castillo had 1. All right. And that's the full list. So Terry, I apologize. This was, It's yet another thing you can blame Phil Neville for. There you go. You're welcome. congratulations, Elliot. Elliot, your prize, if you choose to accept it, is to pick a tune to play out the show to. To which we will play out the show. There we go.
Pick a tune. Oh, that is a tough one. That, I mean, it might be a bit on the nose, but Zed Cars would always be good to play out.
Wow. That would be the first time we've done
would
that.
It?
Yes, it would.
Oh.
Zed Cars. Now, are you talking about with or without Siren?
I reckon without. I reckon you want to save the sirens for the day.
Look at that. He's a purist. Very nice. All right. So, and by the way, in order to keep this legal, we have to have a little Zed Cars banter. Otherwise, you know, nonsense ensues. So, just to talk a little bit about Zed Cars, do you guys know anything about the origin of that besides the fact it's the theme?
No, I've got no idea about the origin of it.
It was a TV show. It was the intro for a TV show, right. A police show set on Merseyside, wasn't it? I mean, I don't know why Watford have got it for that reason. Like, the connection with Everton's pretty obvious, but Watford have had it. Then they were going to bin it for Elton John song. But I watched Watford v Arsenal yesterday, and they're back to using Zed Cars. So
yeah, they are.
Really, really want to think about us and be reminded of us. So they can't let go of Zed Cars because it makes them feel like they're close to us and they've never been close.
There goes Terry romanticizing the Watford supporters again, making them love him even more. It's wonderful. It's beautiful. I had heard that they were going to be getting rid of their Elton John sing-along that they were going to do at the beginning. I'm guessing it was a train wreck. I just feel like you probably have a bunch of supporters like, oh no, I'm not doing that. You know?
I think when you get used to it for so long, you probably think, like, where's Zed Cars gone? It's just bizarre, isn't it? If you can become accustomed to listening to that at the beginning of the game, you must just think, hold on, what's going on?
Yeah.
It's always an interesting thing when I'm sitting beside someone who's never watched Everton play before and they hear what we're playing. And I actually had a friend of mine go, what is with the magical flutes? And I'm like, oh, come on, man. It's tradition. It's tradition, man. It's a traditional club, you know? It's not like we're, you know, playing Phantom Menace or anything or Fatboy Slim or...
who is it? Someone plays Star Wars music.
Yeah,
is it Newcastle?
Spurs. Spurs play Phantom Menace. Yeah. Oh. It's one of the reasons why my buddy Pies is a big Spurs supporter. He's a huge Star Wars fan, and he was like, oh, that just solves it. Yeah. Playing Phantom Menace, man, gotta pick them. And I'm just and I'm just like, I'm not gonna base it on the song they play beforehand, but we have Zed Cars on my kids. They have a mix they listen to before they play soccer games, and yeah, Zed Cars played before Bennett's Junior Academy game on Saturday, like on our drive out to the fields, and put him in a great mood. It was awesome.
With or without the siren?
Oh no, there's no. I couldn't find the siren on Spotify. You know, I also couldn't find Grand Old Team, the Everton, like the Everton one. I only found one for Celtic, and I was not going to use that one. Yeah, for some reason I could not find it on Spotify. If you guys find it, tell me, because I want that. Just saying. I've searched for it for like embarrassingly like an hour. So if you find it in like 5 seconds, I'm going to cry.
Yep. Spirit of the Blues plays at Goodison. It's not like as well known as Grand Old Team or Zed Cars, obviously. Spirit of the Blues is another Everton song. It's really good. I'll send you if you've not heard it, because that's my favourite. I'm going to confess something now. The song Grand Old Team is not my favourite. I don't really like it. To be honest, though, what do I know? I was dead against the siren, and how wrong I was, because it's brilliant. But on paper, when I heard about it, I was like, that'll be stupid, don't do that. Never listen to me about anything ever.
That's okay, Terry. Everybody's wrong at least once.
Mm.
That's your one. It's okay. All right. Yeah. So, all right. So as we're closing out to the, you know, the magical flutes, it's time to end another Toffee Blues podcast. If you've been listening to us, but you know, thanks so much. We really appreciate it. Please subscribe to the Toffee Blues podcast because it doesn't hurt you at all. It can only help you. It can only make your life better. It can only enrich you. So, if you're like, you know what? I'm really curious. You know, I hear Elliot's voice. I want to know what he looks like. Look at the YouTube channel. All right. Because you're missing out. Missing.
I don't know if I got that far. But yeah.
Hey, it is my job to make you guys amazing. All right. So yes. All right. Yeah. You're missing out. So yeah, check out the YouTube channel. Bask in their glory. Yes. I just like saying that phrase. I'm sorry. I also like watching them squirm when I say that stuff. It's pretty wonderful. Terry's gotten to the point where he's so used to it. He just sits there and be like, stop it, Jerry. Yeah, see, pshaw is what he says. Pshaw. All right. So so check out the YouTube channel if you like. That would be awesome. If you want more Elliot, read Everton. He's the editor-in-chief there, runs a lot of the content there. You should check that out. Check his Twitter profile. You know, follow him on Twitter. He's putting out a lot of football-based information, but also film and TV stuff. All right? So
a lot of variety.
Yes. Yes. He likes Mindhunter. Check that
come
out.
Come and join me. Tweet me.
Also, if you want more Terry, besides just walking the streets and whistling a tune, he'll find you. You should also check out Liverpool Echo Fan Jury. He puts his words on there every so often. Check out his Twitter. He'll tell you when that's going to happen. He's the huggable man. Make it happen. All right. So lastly, but not leastly, I made that up. Check. Holy hell. Terry, what on earth is going on over there?
Yeah, I mean, can I briefly tell you what it was? It was a money clip that I've got with my name on it that my wife got me for my birthday. God bless the confidence of my wife thinking I will ever need a money clip because I never have. But I was playing with it and dropped it and it sounded like the world was ending.
You're like, I've got this money clip and I'm trying to figure out how to put the coins in there. It's just not working. Right on. All right. So anyway, check out the Toffee Blues website. There's all things Everton on there. There's a lot of good stuff from our contributors that come on here and talk. So check that out as well. Follow the Toffee Blues on Twitter and Instagram and Facebook. And if you feel like following Jerry on Twitter, that's up to you. All right. I guess that's it, guys. Terry, thanks so much. Good to talk to you again.
Good to talk to you guys too. See you
Elliot,
soon.
Nice to meet you. Thanks again for all the information, the good talks, and the patience.
Yeah, it's been a pleasure.
All right. Thanks again, everybody. We'll see you later. Let's try to think happy thoughts after what happened Sunday. Much love to everybody. Bye.